Is tape two of an unrehearsed interview with Mr. I.O. Chitwood by Debbie Wilson for the Kentucky Oral History Commission. The interview was conducted at the home of Mr. Chitwood in Corbin, Kentucky on July 20, 1978 at 4 o'clock p.m. Now, Mr. Chitwood, before I change tapes, you were telling what the Kiwanis Club of Corbin had to do to get the road established to Cumberland Falls.
Well, the committee got busy. And and we got her, went with the help us. He was a civil engineer, and he helped us survey out a good route. We got this grader and Caterpillar tractor from the State Highway Department. We had to pay the men for. It took two men, one to drive the tractor and one the grader. And we had to buy the gasoline. And so we started grading the country road right out Fifth Street and making it as wide as we could. People were very cooperative. They set their fences back. And so then we decided we was going to have to have a camp on the far end for people to spend the night. So the Legion, members of the American Legion, helped us on that. They agreed to help us with the camp. So we went to Frankfort and got about a dozen big army tents. We built a camp down there. And we had a mess tent and a kitchen tent, and we had a tent full of sleep, and they put signs on them, just the boys, you know, had collected. And then they had a place where they burned the rubbish. Somebody, wise boy, put up for an incinerator. Well, everybody that come along would say, "You haven't got it spelled right," and they changed it. And so I don't know whether we ever did find out the way to spell incinerator or not. Get that. But anyway, we only, all of our help was volunteer until we got to building the bridge. And that was the big bridge. It was 190 feet long and had about 1,800 pine trees that we cut down to build this bridge. So we got a couple of bridge men from the Illinois Railroad so that it be constructed strong and of a good design and be safe to drive an automobile or truck over. And the rest of the help was all volunteer. And some of the companies that had teams of mules would loan us the team of mules, and then the country fellows would. We'd cut those trees down and put them into the bridge. And then, of course, some of the approaches would be pretty rough. We had to buy some dynamite to blast that out. And I know one day we was taking a load of dynamite out in this Model T car, and I had two cases on the floor. And you know, the thing that's dangerous about dynamite is those blasting caps. And I had those in my lap. And I says, "Boys, if this thing starts turning over, I'm gonna throw these caps clear over the bluff." But we had no trouble, and got the thing graded out, and our bridge made, and we invited Governor Fields to come down for the dedication of the opening of the road, and we were able to take 500 cars out there that day over this rustic trail that we'd been through. Of course, some of the wise guys put a few signs on the road. I know one place, it was pretty rough. You couldn't make over 5 miles an hour or so, and they had a hand-lettered sign there and says, drive slow. And then when they got to the little hill where we'd blasted out of rocks, it's a little steep, that says, now give her hell. So that was the road signs that our boys put out. But we actually had more fun working on that rustic trail than we now have going down there over a modern highway.
Well, now, just why would these people volunteer to help work on this road? What was their purpose?
Well, you know, people did those things in those days. Just like when we were trying to get the Dixie Highway established through here, a main highway that would be connected up, and that was later became 25, and it's still known as the Dixie Highway. Why, the towns, we would have a road working, and the whole town would turn out. The president of the bank, trucks, everything. And the boys maybe hadn't had a chew of tobacco for 10 or 15 years. I'd get out on that road, take my chew of tobacco, and just shovel like everything.
You actually had workings to build your roads?
That's right. I'd volunteer. I mean, no pay. Just go out there for to be doing something. We'd get food donated. We'd make coffee in these big lard cans. Well, gosh, we'd make probably 50 gallons of coffee for one of those that were road working. A lot of people went. And then when we got the thing kind of roped up till you could kind of drive the car with two mules, why, we declared the road open.
When you had to pull cars through with mules, right?
Oh, they sure did. Well, it rained, you know, and they couldn't get through.
Now, what other things would communities pitch in to do?
Oh, well, there's always something that your clubs work at. During the WPA days, we had a very active committee. We painted all the school buildings. We built a new gymnasium for the high school. We put in a white way on Main Street, and we paved a lot of the country roads leading out of town with just burnt cinders, and you can do a lot of work by hand, and we cleaned out Lynn Camp Creek. We had over 100 men there that worked all summer on that, just cleaning the thing out and getting the rubbish out and cleaning out all the septic tanks. And you had a lot of fun doing it. I mean, the people, while they didn't have much, I know when we started to widen the street, the federal government on a works project of that kind they'd pay for all that lay, but they would limit your materials to about 20% of the amount of the labor. Well, in widening this Main Street, we had figured on using dump trucks to haul the stuff away. Well, they wouldn't put that in as labor. That had to be material. Well, we didn't have enough money to do that. But they would pay us for, it pays 40 cents an hour for the driver of a wagon. And 8 hours would be $3.20. Well, you could hire a team and driver for $3 a day. And they were glad to get the work. And so we had 50 wagons and teams. And this is in modern time, you might say, is in the 30s. hauling this stuff off of Main Street where we was grading it out to widen the street and put in the widely over to the football field. And we would put two befores in the bottom of the wagon bed, and when we got over there to dump it, all you do just raise up the two befores and the dirt would fall through. It was automatic dumping. Well, from an engineering standpoint, we moved the dirt for about 75 cents a yard, and that's about what it costs now to do it with modern equipment.
Well, since you've mentioned the WPA, just what was the depression, the Great Depression's effect on Wheatley County?
Well, of course, the people had some hardships, and it was a good forum. It was altogether up to the local people whether you did anything worthwhile. And if you had a committee that would work up some good projects, the people were willing to work, and they didn't get much out of it, but they did get something to eat, and that was important. See, we had no food stamps. We had no, and even before the government started our WPA program, the only help we had was Red Cross. Red Cross gave us $15,000 to spend here one winter before the government did. And all that would buy for a family of, say, three, we would allot them $3.25. And that would buy some meal and some pinto beans, and we forced them to take a half a dozen cans of tomatoes to keep down the plague. And you know, the people didn't want to waste their money on tomatoes, they wanted more beans. And that was your way and a lot of people didn't have anything but cornbread and beans and a little seasoning meat. One minister around here came in the office one day and had found a family that hadn't had anything to eat except beans without any seasoning and cornbread made with just water. And that was all, nothing to go in. And they were too proud to aspirin here. So as you see, things were pretty rough. And I hope that this country never goes through anything where that they have that kind of hardship. And of course, a lot of the people, the ones that were on the farms and had their, they couldn't get anything for their produce or anything, but they had plenty to eat.
Well, how would you say this area compared to other areas during the Depression? Was it as bad as most areas, or would it have been worse, you think? Or?
No, I think it was average. And then, of course, the railroads run. And there, of course, a lot of their men were cut off. And a lot of the people, business people, couldn't make expenses. But most of them paid their bills. They kept their expenses within their income. And that will save any country.
Did you have anybody that actually starved to death here during the Depression that you know
of? I don't think so. Because if it was known, there was always people, just like this family when he found out he made about a big wagon load of stuff and took it out.
I want to back up just a little bit to Prohibition. Now, you said you came here in 1921 and the saloons were already gone, so just what effect did Prohibition have on this area? Did it increase the moonshining? And Rollins?
I don't think that prohibition affected, I think it curtailed the open sale of whiskey, I had a friend who was the city attorney, and at first it was enforced rigidly, and but the ones who wanted some could always get it through moonshiners or bring it. Of course, there wasn't any legal liquor made except for municipal purposes. And but he said at the beginning that the people would testify against a bootlegger or something like that. But he said that it wasn't too long till it was hard to get anybody that would witness against them. They would know who they were. And as long as they were orderly or so on, well, they'd get arrested every once in a while. And but that was just the attitude of the public. But the big majority was against people drinking.
There's
no question about that.
Well, what about the First and Second World Wars? Did they have any special effect here in Whitley County? Any particular feelings against or for?
Well, I would say that the people through all the mountain sections were very patriotic. And we had no dissenters as such. Of course, we had some that hated to go, but well, they went, and they made good soldiers.
Well, I want to discuss now some things, just some changes that you have seen in your lifetime, such as, what about the coming of electricity? Yeah.
Well, it's a great convenience. But especially refrigeration, I'll say, and even heating and air conditioning. But you got along all right. Just like when you build a house, you build it with a fairly high season and you ceiling, and you always had good ventilation. And I know when I built my house here, we had cross ventilation, and then I planted a fast growing tree on the south side to shade that part of the building. And it did a really good job. And it didn't take it long. And actually, in this section of the country, I believe statistics says there's only about 16 nights on an average when it's uncomfortable to sleep in this mountain area. And I believe that holds out. Some summers, you know, I didn't notice it at all, but it's always cooling up at night to sleep good. And people were generally healthy, and they could stand a little perspiration.
Well, what was the attitude of people when electricity first came? I mean, were they frightened by it or impressed by it? Or?
Oh, no, not at all. Our people are very intelligent, and then, of course, in the early days, people were very economical for anything. They go around and turn the lights off, which people don't do very much nowadays. They don't watch their expenses.
Well, now, what about refrigeration? You mentioned that electricity brought great improvements. What did you do? I mean, how did you refrigerate things before?
Well, of course, you had ice. We had an ice plant here, and most of the little towns had ice. And of course, if you want to go far enough back, the plantations in Virginia they cut the ice out of the rivers, and they live very elegantly, you know, with their ice that they had stored. And then their buildings were built, you know, till they were comfortable, both in the summer and in winter. And they lived well. And we lived well. Healthy, had large families, had a good time, and didn't mind working, didn't mind helping on different things that come along.
You mentioned earlier that you could remember when there were no movies. Now, when did you see your first picture show? Do you have any idea about what year that was?
Oh, yeah. I remember we were living in Harriman, and the carnivals in those days had all the latest things in entertainment. This particular carnival had a high diver that dive off a 90-foot ladder. They had a motion picture show, and they were showing Jack and the Beanstalk and McKinley's Funeral. That was about 1902, and they'd show that over and over again. And that was before that any of the towns had the picture show. They would usually have a stage play of some kind. And of course, we kids liked to see that acting, you know, in the finale where everybody would have a pistol on somebody else in their Wild West show. And they were really educational, and then of course we had this cotton candy came out about that time, and we had of course peanuts and popcorn. We incidentally, I remember the first ice cream cone that I ever ate. A fella came to town, and down on Main Street, right around behind one of the main business buildings, he got permission to put up a little tent. And that was in about 1908 to 1910. And he had a little gasoline stove. He mixed up a batter to make these homemade type ice cream cones. And he'd stick his irons down in the batter, which was the shape of a cone, and get the batter on them and put them in this oven. And he could bake four at a time. And so he'd bake these homemade cones all morning, and you have a big stack of them. And we kids go by there after school, and we'd buy him out in about 10 minutes. He'd fill him up with real homemade ice cream that he froze right there on the spot. And we'd stand in line then for him to make some more cone. And of course, it wasn't too many years after that till they got to make them commercially. But none of them was as good as that homemade batter that is made out of good cake dough. And toast them good and brown, fill them with ice cream. They would be good right now.
Well, you mentioned to me before we started taping that you remembered your first grapefruit. Now, that's something that's very common today. Was fruit such as this not common in?
No, grapefruit is a modern development that the botanists develop. That's where it gets its name. The fruit grows in kind of clusters, maybe four or five together, if you've ever seen a tree of grapefruit. And that's where it's got the name grapefruit. And you see, it was probably, I don't know what they developed it out of, a lemon, crossed out of lemons and oranges or something. And, but those, that's a 20th century deal. Well, that's come along since the 1900s. Yeah, I was attending a boys' convention in Chattanooga and stayed at the home of Senator Frazier. And you see, that was about 1910, I guess. And the senator's house was lighted by gas, and they had gas to cook by. Of course, electricity was coming on, but all of the homes, and even in Chattanooga, didn't have electricity at that time. The senator didn't have it. He'd been the past governor. And my friend and I that stayed there, we had one of his boys around, and they were real nice to it. Now, they served us great food. And beaten biscuits, of course, southern delicacy. Another thing, the senator was very nice to us boys. He, with some of his political friends had come in, and they'd usually smoke a nice cigar. And then he'd always have a little conversation with us and tell us some story. And he had a beautiful dome on his mantel place that had a little ship that had been put together out of toothpicks or something in there. And it's a beautiful thing, all colored, beautiful little ship, but it assembled just piece by piece into this dome or glass bottle or whatever it was. And the senator who had informed when the governor said that a convict made that while he's in prison. And he says, incidentally, he says, I pardoned him. He says, I figure if he's industrious enough to do something like that, that he was all right to turn out.
Pardon me, I'm going to turn this tape over. Side 2 of tape 2 of an interview with Mr. I.O. Chitwood. Now, Mr. Chitwood, what would you like to say in summing up our discussion of Whitley County, Kentucky?
Well, about all you, all a person can say, like the college professor says in summing up, is that it's been an ordinary, a normal, patriotic group of citizens who have settled this area. They have been willing to work in their communities. And sometimes we think that it's the people who hold the big jobs that's important to the country. But actually, it's the little constable, the little squire, the fellow who leads the singing in a country church or a big church. It doesn't matter. As we fill our places and do our duty for the little jobs that come along. And of course we have our little business groups, our Kiwanis Club, Rotary Club, Lions Club, and of course the women have gotten into the thing pretty strong with all of the women's clubs and the garden clubs and their business and professional club. And all these people help make their communities. And then of course our family groups, people that have developed families and the form of creation that brings different groups together. And that's a part of our local history and development too. And of course, it's gotten a little more complicated. And not too far back, a boy would court a girl over in the next hollow, and they would get married, and the father would give him probably 60 or 100 acres of land, and he'd start out. And of course, sometimes the guy would do so good, he would own several hundred acres by the time that he got his family up. But each would fill their niche, and the ones that have gone on before are the ones who have made it possible for us to be here. And they made a real good country out of it. And I've enjoyed all the little things that I have worked on. I've been on the school board, served on the utility commission. I was chairman of the library board for several years. I've been a deacon in the church. And as we used to say in the public speakers course, I have done a lot of wind jamming myself, but never any preaching. But we've had a lot of fun together, and we believe that the future is good. I know we had a minister of the Christian Church here that I think was making an address at an armistice gathering, and he said that he believed this country had been selected for freedom by divine providence, and that we would never go back on the gift that has been given us. And it's good to think that it's a good chance of being that way. And of course, we as citizens want to do all we can to protect that heritage and see that it goes forward. Now, a lot of little incidents have happened as we go along through life. I would like to think of and the time, good time we've had together. And so, and there's a lot of these humorous anecdotes that sometimes people can write about that all of us have had experience in. But on this particular tape and this occasion, we've tried to stay off of that too much in order to might tell something that might be of interest in this section that probably hasn't been written about. However, there is one little story that, since you mentioned some of the methods of transportation, I could tell you about the little trip I took on the steamboat when I was a boy, 6 years old. We went from near Pinehot, Kentucky, to Burnside. We spent the night at the Seven Gables Hotel, where we had very excellent food, and then loaded on the steamboat the next morning to go down the Cumberland River to Burkesville, Kentucky, where my mother's sister lived. Well, the steamboat was a very interesting trip. It had electric lights, and they hauled freight as well as carried passengers. And it was the only method of transportation in that section of the country. I was working for a wholesale house at Oneida, and we had a lot of large customers down there around Albany. I remember very well they would buy 100 cases of rolled oats at one time. And it was always interesting to see the steamboats come in and the people come down and get on and go off and unload their freight. And on this particular trip, they were shipping a lot of hogs, and they let down the gangplank and put canvas up down the sides, and they'd start pushing the hogs up the gangplank, and some of them would run easily, and some of them they'd have to catch, and some of them they'd get away and run down the river, and they'd drag them back by their hind feet and squealing. And that was all exciting to a boy. And then some of the men on the at the top deck would shoot wild ducks along the river, and that was interesting. And probably the most interesting thing on the boat was the excellent food they had. In those days, steamboats were noted for their food that they had. And you can see why. A lot of the exotic foods came in through New Orleans up the Mississippi River and to Nashville in the Cumberland River, and then on up to Burnside. And all the towns along the road, along the river, had access to these market of these imported foods and other things. One of the things that I tasted for the first time was some horseradish. I was a little curly-haired boy, and the clerk was real nice to me on the boat, and so I'd always hang around and eat with him after the other folks had their food. And so he was putting some horseradish on something one time, and it looked real nice, so I told him I would like to have some. He says, "Well, how much do you want?" I said, "Oh, give me a whole lot." He said, "Maybe you'd better taste a little bit of it first." And so I did, and that's the first time I ever had any horseradish. But it was in the late spring of the year, and sometimes the water would be a little low, and the men would have to get long poles and get out and help the engine run the paddle wheels to get it through the low place. And then we would have some excitement when we would meet another steamboat, especially if it was larger, and it'd be a lot of hollering going on because he was getting too close to the waves would be about to push us in for the bank. But the reason why I tell you that story is that there was no highways, no railroads into that section of the country, and the transportation was by steamboat. We had a very enjoyable visit there. My cousins took me out to an oil well, and that's the first oil well I'd ever seen, and incidentally that was one of the first oil fields in the United States, was in Cumberland County near Burkesville down there. And of course he got a little can full of the oil from one of the wells, and we poured it on a bush, and then he struck a match and lighted it, and we had a burning bush. Mm-hmm. That was interesting. And so we spent about 5 weeks down there visiting relatives and traveling through the country in just either a wagon or a horse and buggy, because there was no other transportation.
Is So you've seen transportation change then from the horse and buggy to I-75 out here in Whitley County?
Yeah, and then and the jet planes are going overhead and riding on them. Got on the plane to visit my folks in California down here one afternoon in Knoxville with one stop, and we were in California in 5 hours. Isn't that something?
Used to, you couldn't go to Lexington that length of time. Thank you very much, Mr. Chitwood.